Thank you, Blessing Zulu, and good evening, Zimbabwe. You're listening to Studio 7 from The Voice of America on Tuesday, December 30th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Ndimiyake Mwakalielie.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Zimbabwe has been ranked by an American think tank as among top countries in the world with a high fragile alert status.
Lumping Zimbabwe together with countries which are undergoing wars and terrorism is sheer madness. We don't have any war in Zimbabwe.
The death toll from traffic accidents this festive season reaches 88, surpassing the number of people killed during the same period last year.
We lost a great number of people, most because of overspeeding and over drunken driving, which we normally call a human error. Though we've got other factors which actually cause some accidents, but the highest percentage was the human error.
And Zimbabwe cricket has unveiled Dave Watmore as the new coach of the national team.
An American think tank has ranked Zimbabwe among top countries in the world with a high fragile alert status. In its 2014 Fragile States Index report, the Fund for Peace ranked Zimbabwe 11th among 178 nations. It is ranked among countries like Chad, Afghanistan, Yemen, Haiti, Pakistan, Guinea, Iraq, Cote d'Ivoire, Syria, and Guinea-Bissau. Zimbabwe was ranked 10th in 2013, a point higher than the current fragile state status.
Countries in the very high alert fragile state status include South Sudan, which tops the list, followed by Somalia, Central African Republic, Democratic Republic of Congo, and Sudan. The rankings are determined by a nation's security situation, socio-economic and political environment, and several other factors. It is designed to promote stability worldwide, spur conversations, encourage debate, and help guide strategies for sustainable security. ZANU-PF Politburo member Paul Mangwana tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu it is senseless to rank Zimbabwe as having a high alert status, as it is not a fragile state.
Lumping Zimbabwe together with countries which are undergoing wars and terrorism is sheer madness. We don't have any war in Zimbabwe. We are only suffering from illegal sanctions imposed on us by the West, including the United States of America. Otherwise, a lot of our people from the diaspora are here in Zimbabwe today enjoying Christmas and New Year with their families. Once we address the economy through Zim Asset, I do not think we can be classified as a country which is poor at all. We obviously have now learned how to deal with the effects of sanctions. You can imagine that from 2000 up to where we are now, we've been under relentless sanctions from superpowers, but we've remained strong and going on. We don't have any people who are dying of hunger in our country. We may have people who are not formally employed, but we've got people who are employed in an informal way in their own country and making sure that their families are being fed. In fact, some of the Western countries are now beneficiaries of their own evil deeds, in the sense that most of our best brains are in the United States and the United Kingdom and Australia today, running industries and businesses in those countries on behalf of our enemies who are imposing sanctions at home. So we are actually benefiting the very same people who are now maligning us.
But
what I consider to be an unfairness in the international order.
But Mr. Mangwana, do you think the government is doing enough to reverse this negative perception about Zimbabwe, which obviously will end up impacting negatively on potential investors?
Yes, it is doing the best it can, but you cannot fight well-sponsored international media. We are only a very small country. If we use the little we have to try and fight the effects of the negative publicity of the international media, we'll not be able to feed our people. So we prioritize and say, why don't you get drugs in the clinics, books in our schools, food on the table for our people, and then use the little we can do diplomatic efforts to fight the negative perception. But we are doing our best.
That was ZANU-PF Politburo member Paul Mangwana speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. But Joy Mabenge of Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition says he's not surprised about the country's ranking.
It's very, very correct that even after the election in 2013, there has not been any improvement in terms of people moving back to Zimbabwe. In fact, we have continued to see people moving to neighboring countries and applying pressure there, like South Africa, Botswana, and other countries. There has not been any improvement in terms of people's well-being and economic development. Quite clearly, we are worse off than we were in 2009 or during the period of the inclusive government. And this government even knows it, and even the Minister of Finance did allude to that effect when he presented the 2015 national budget.
But the government, Mr. Mabenge, will argue that the only reason that the situation is desperate in Zimbabwe is because of the sanctions that were imposed on Zimbabwe by the West.
Well, that is the government's argument. It is an argument that we have heard. They've said that since 2012. It is a 12-year-old argument, and it is tired. But nonetheless, also, you must understand that things have also begun to change. But I want to point to the fact that in as much as the government wants to look at exogenous factors, they must also look at internal factors, because this index also uses such variables as the existence of corruption and how it is exercised, particularly by those that have power, the elites. So the government must also begin to introspect.
And that was Joy Mabenge speaking with Studio 7.
The death toll from traffic accidents this festive season has climbed to 88, surpassing the number of people killed during the same period last year. Police spokesperson Chief Superintendent Paul Nyati says the increase marks a 6% surge in the fatalities and 20% in the number of crashes. He says more than 2,300 unroadworthy vehicles have been impounded. Lawmaker Albert Ntlanga, who sits on the Parliamentary Transport Committee, tells Studio 7's Ntunga Milinkomo that motorists should drive with extra caution as the New Year's holiday approaches.
I will advise the people of Zimbabwe to drive safely, because what we have seen in the last holiday for the Christmas, we lost a great number of people, most because of over-speeding and over-drunken driving, which we normally call a human error. Though we've got other factors which actually cause some accidents, but the highest percentage was the human error because of over-speeding and drunken driving.
Besides human error, Mr. Mhlanga, how much do you think the issue of unroadworthy vehicles is contributing to these accidents?
Is actually taking also a higher percentage. The problem with this unworthy road vehicle is the actually traffic police. I've driven, normally when we drive these Ford Ranger Isuzu, they don't stop us. But I've tried to use a Toyota Corolla myself. They didn't even know me. Every roadblock, they will actually ask for a $5. They will look for a tire, and they know that the tire is actually smooth. But when you give them a $5, that's a license. And we are quite positive. I'm quite positive that it's happening to all Zimbabweans. People are not actually encouraged to work on their vehicles.
Lawmaker Albert Ntlanga, who sits on the Transport Committee in Parliament, speaking with Studio 7's Ntunga Milinkomo.
Farmers have expressed anxiety over the incessant rainfall which started a fortnight ago in most parts of the country, with those in drought-prone regions saying the heavy rains came too late, while others fear it will destroy their already thriving crops. However, farmer and agriculture expert Mandla Nkomo tells reporter Standekile Mhlanga there are several ways in which farmers can save their crops or use the current rains to their advantage.
As a farmer, the one thing that you can't control is the weather. But what you can control is your state of preparedness. And I think that the rains are good. We should celebrate the rains and not complain that they are early or they are late. Rather, we should plan our farming around what the weather is allowing us. People in places like Maswingo, Matabeleland, north and south, I'm quite confident that if people have got the input that they need, they'll still be able to get a harvest. But they need to plant those varieties that are much more shorter Beyond that, it starts to become a little bit on the dicey side.
What advice would you give to those who have already planted their crops?
You're going to have what we call nutrient leaching. And my advice to them is that, unfortunately, they will need to apply an additional dressing of ammonium nitrate to save the crop, because a lot of the nutrients that they had already put in are no longer available for the crop. So they need to come in and put in some ammonium nitrate. And I think that will actually turn their crops around and they'll still be able to get a reasonable yield.
That was farmer and agriculture expert Mandla Nkomo on the line from Johannesburg in South Africa.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
some Zimbabweans say the year 2014 was bitterly challenging due to the harsh economic environment and unemployment blues.
But first, here's a look at regional and international news.
Indonesian officials have recovered several bodies from the sea near the wreckage of an Air Asia passenger jet that crashed during a storm Sunday. Local television Tuesday showed rescue helicopters pulling bodies from the Java Sea about 160 kilometers off the coast of Borneo Island.
The Somali government says Al-Shabaab's intelligence chief was killed in a U.S. airstrike near the town of Sakao. A statement issued by Somali's National Intelligence and Security Agency Tuesday says Abdishakur Talil was killed along with two others in Monday's strike. It says he was traveling between Sakao and the village of Jawari when his vehicle was destroyed.
Emergency officials in Greece are responding to a distress signal from a cargo ship believed to be carrying hundreds of migrants in the Ionian Sea. The Moldovan-flagged Blue Sky M was sailing off the island of Corfu on Tuesday when someone aboard this ship made the call for help.
And finally, residents and diplomats have reported heavy gunfire in Gambia's capital in the area of the city that contains the presidential palace. The armed attackers began shooting early Tuesday in Banjul, but the situation appeared calm by midday. President Yahya Jammeh was not in the country, though there were conflicting reports about his exact location. There were no confirmations of a coup attempt and no immediate statements by the government.
Ordinary Zimbabweans say they found the year 2014 bitterly challenging in the wake of a crippling economy coupled with unemployment, for which they blame the ruling ZANU-PF party and opposition and civil society for failing to hold the government accountable. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera has more details from Harare.
Despite promising more than 2 million jobs in the 2013 elections, many Zimbabweans saw 2014 come to an end without jobs as companies continued to shut down, revealing signs of a worsening economy. Many say the ZANU-PF government and President Robert Mugabe seemed concerned with dousing succession fires within the party than tackling more critical national issues such as reviving the economy. With many now forced to find their own employment in what former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai termed a nation of vendors, Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions Young Workers Council member Godfrey Mutimba says his main worry in 2014 was the ruling party's failure to live up to its promise of creating jobs.
At least 10 companies were closing every month in the country, and that alone was a major disappointment to the young people in Zimbabwe.
Former students leader Clever Bere echoes the same sentiments, adding that the nation expected a lot from the ZANU-PF government, but nothing came out, and if anything, the situation got worse.
I don't think there is something that we can positively pin to say in 2014 as a country we have achieved 1, 2, 3.
Their views are supported by former top treasury employee and economist Masimba Manyanya, who believes that the ruling party has failed to turn around the economy as all targets set in the budget were missed.
The budget failed to create an environment of confidence, especially in the financial sector. And the economic crisis began to perpetuate itself into a social crisis as well as a political crisis.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa projected that the economy would grow by at least 6% when he initially presented the country's national budget, but the government downgraded the figure to just over 3% within 8 months. The International Monetary Fund also indicated that Zimbabwe was likely to grow by almost 2.5% in 2014, saying the situation remained difficult in the country with deflation, lack of foreign direct investment, inconsistent investment policies, and other factors undercutting the ailing economy. While the economy was sliding further, the ZANU-PF party dumped then-Vice President Joyce Mujuru in the run-up to its Congress following party allegations that she was corrupt and wanted to unseat President Mugabe unconstitutionally. Some Zimbabweans say the sacking of Ms. Mujuru and her allies, who included other top party and government officials like Didmus Mutasa, Rugare Gumbo, Nicholas Gotch and others ahead of the Congress early this month, did not raise any hopes of a better future in the country. Ordinary people like Wakefield Mulilo don't believe that the firing of Ms. Mujuru and ministers will resolve the country's economic crisis.
One obviously expects the new brooms to sweep cleaner. But let's wait and see. Probably we need to give them time. Let them move in. Let's see what they come up with. But it's going to be an uphill task for them.
Manyanya is that there is no reason why the ruling party and government kept Ms. Mujuru in office for 10 years if she was corrupt and incompetent.
The vice president has been kept on a hefty salary for all that long, when people in the party knew very well that she was involved in scandals, in political scandals. The question is, why do we allow people to occupy such positions of influence at a huge cost to the economy and to society without making a concrete decision? Immediately people discover that that kind of thing is happening. So public sympathy ordinarily would drift to Mujuru.
Bere says he is disappointed that the ZANU-PF Congress failed to deal with corruption, as some of the people widely believed to be corrupt had been elevated.
If we need to deal with corruption, we clearly have to do away with ZANU-PF as a country.
ZANU-PF activist Goodson Nguni said the economy could not perform to expectations due to economic sanctions imposed by the United States and its Western allies. Former ZANU-PF legislator Bright Matonga said the economy is, however, stabilized and there is room for growth next year.
So there is a stability. Of course, cash has been a problem, but at least you've got goods on the shelf.
He further says Mujuru's expulsion could be a confidence booster if evidence is found that she was indeed corrupt. For the first time since independence in 1980, Mugabe fired his deputy and 16 ministers and deputies, claiming they were corrupt and had hatched a plan to topple him. Most of them have denied any wrongdoing. On the other hand, some Zimbabweans rapped opposition parties for failing to take advantage of the fragmented ZANU-PF party to build a powerful supporters base and turn around the fortunes of the country. They attacked former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai for failing to mobilize people to protest against the declining economy due to fissures in his own party, which led to the formation of the MDC renewal team. The group has since teamed up with another MDC party led by Professor Welsh Mengube in an attempt to form a formidable opposition party. Manyanya says the opposition in Zimbabwe is too weak at present to mount any serious challenge to President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party.
Zimbabwe needs a strong opposition, credible opposition, that can stand up with alternative policies and strategies, and that stands up tall above the mess that we are in right now.
But Tsvangirai argues that he is ready to join hands with other opposition parties to form one strong united front and challenge Mugabe's rule.
The time to unite and mobilize the people of Zimbabwe for the end game is beckoning. I, for one, myself, would be prepared to consider that very, very serious. And the sooner people sit together and start discussing about how to unite, how to form a formidable force to find a national solution, the better.
Political parties like Transform Zimbabwe and the African Democratic Party led by Marcelini Chikasha were formed in 2014 as the fight for democracy continued in Zimbabwe. It remains to be seen what these parties will do in 2015 as the country is set to hold the next general election in 2018. ZANU-PF has already declared that President Mugabe will be the party's presidential candidate. He will be 94 years old at that time. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
A former Home Affairs and Defence Minister Innocent Kala, who died last year, is a man credited for the formation of ZANU, which was launched at his house in 1963. Nkala was a man close to liberation icons like the late Joshua Nkomo and President Robert Mugabe. He revealed about a year ago that he was going to write his memoirs that were going to be published only after his death. Studio 7 tomorrow talks to former National University of Science and Technology lecturer Dumiso Gilbert Machazi, who chickened out of the writing project after realizing that what Nkala wanted to reveal about Mr. Mugabe and others was too hot for him to handle.
They knew a lot of things about each other. There are many things Nkala knew about a lot of things about the origin of the president, according to him. And he knew some things that were deeply personal. That he had not here was only going to start telling me when we started writing. So unfortunately, we didn't do the project long enough for me to get there. But he knew a lot of things, and he just felt that maybe, and because of the respect I think that he had for the president, he didn't want these things revealed by him whilst the president was alive or while he was alive.
Tune in tomorrow for the full interview in which former lecturer Dumiso Gilbert Machazi talks about how he chickened out of a project to write the memoirs of the late Defence Minister Innocent Kala, who wanted them published only after his death.
The Jameson Vic Falls Carnival entered its second day in the resort town today, with thousands of local and international revelers hoping to ring in their new year during a star-studded concert that will end the event tomorrow. Today's event is being held at the Victoria Falls Primary School. Legendary singer Oliver Tuku Mtukudzi, Winky D, and other famous Southern African artists will also perform tomorrow. The third edition of the carnival is the brainchild of Victoria Falls businessman Blessing Munyanyiwa and Sean Young. Emmanuel Tirivachki, who is attending the carnival, tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mklanga Nyahuye that he is impressed with the events so far and expects that the event will generate a lot of business for the town.
Today, we are doing the color fest. The mood and the hype is just amazing. As we speak, I'm sure you can hear from the background that there is a massive sound going on and people are jumping to high levels, and they are enjoying themselves, throwing the powder in the air, painting each other.
Which performing artists are expected to be performing at this carnival, and who's your favorite?
We've got Goldfish, we've got Dickenberg, we've got Oliver Mtukudzi, we've got Winky D, and we've got quite a number of DJs that include Arcadabas, Toby Tissues, among others. I would say my favorite is obviously none other than Tuku, the man himself.
That was Emmanuel Tirivachki at the Jameson Vic Falls Carnival, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mklanga Nyahuye from Victoria Falls.
And now an editorial reflecting the views of the American government.
With an estimated 21 million people around the world victimized by human trafficking, the United States is fully engaged in combating what President Obama has called one of the great human rights causes of our time, modern-day slavery. Every year, the Department of State releases a comprehensive report on governmental anti-human trafficking efforts. It tracks global trends in 188 countries, including law enforcement, victim identification, and protection and prevention efforts. We have stepped up efforts to combat human trafficking abroad and in the United States, where many unwitting victims are brought. On December 11th, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security announced it had partnered with one of the nation's largest highway travel center operators to train its employees to look for signs of people being transported against their will in this country and to notify the proper authorities. Travel Centers of America will provide DHS training and awareness materials, including posters, handouts, and a public service announcement, to over 250 locations and more than 15,000 employees across the United States. These materials will help Travel Centers of America personnel and customers to identify and recognize indicators of human trafficking, as well as provide information on how to report suspected cases. Victims often find themselves in a foreign country where they can't speak the language. In addition, traffickers frequently take away the victim's travel and identity documents, telling them that if they attempt to escape, they or their families back home will be harmed, or that their families will assume the debt. Travel Centers of America's involvement in the trucking industry makes it a critical partner in the fight against human trafficking. Truck drivers who know potential indicators of human trafficking and how to report it can provide eyes and ears all around the country.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the American government. Wild animals, especially lions in the Wange district, Matabeleland North Province, are reported to have killed dozens of cattle and goats. Although no figures of cattle that have been killed by the lions was made available to Studio 7, some villagers put the estimate at about 200 beasts. But the state-run Chronicle newspaper reports that 32 cattle have been killed so far. We spoke to a villager from the Jambezi communal area near Victoria Falls, whose name is Ndarapegwa Mate, for details.
The problem I can say is that we do not have support from the national park and these guys, the Kempfer people. Because when we ask people this side, there is nothing that you can do. It's only to report, he said that to the therapy, then they help us to go to the national park, but then the results are negative.
Now, can you tell us, from what you have seen, how big is this problem?
It's a big problem because animals are now getting to nothing because several people have got nothing to do now.
What do you think is the reason behind this increase in the attacks by these wild animals?
The reason I can say is that long back we were having these, what I said, the cullings, the killing of elephants and the lions. But this time, it's long back, I lasted seeing animals like elephants being killed. So at least I can say there are now many. They need to be reduced at least a little bit.
That was Ndarapegwa Mate, a villager from the Jambezi communal area near Victoria Falls. Efforts to talk to the Department of Parks and Wildlife Management were fruitless.
And now to sports. Zimbabwe cricket has unveiled Dave Watmore as the new coach of the national team. The coach has a lot of work to do as the team has been on the receiving end of international matches. Our reporter Michael Kariati reports from Harare.
Zimbabwe cricket chairman Hussein Manase, who unveiled Watmore today, said the new coach is taking over from Steve Mangongo, who was fired on December 17. Manase noted that Watmore is not new to those.
We apologize. We're not sure what happened to Michael Kariati's report on the cricket team, but hopefully we'll have it back for you shortly. This is Studio 7 for Zimbabwe, coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington.
Zimbabwe cricket chairman Hussein Manase, who unveiled Watmore today, said the new coach is taking over from Steve Mangongo, who was fired on December 17. Manase noted that Watmore is not new to those who follow cricket. He said Watmore is coming to Zimbabwe with a wealth of experience, having coached Bangladesh, Sri Lanka and Pakistan. The Zimbabwe cricket board said Watmore, who won the Cricket World Cup with Sri Lanka in 1996, has been tasked with ensuring Zimbabwe's good run at the 2015 World Cup. Watmore indicated that his target is to take Zimbabwe to the Super 8 stage at the Global Cricket Festival. But the Australian has a lot of work to do as he tries to rejuvenate a team that has been battered on the international scene ahead of the 2015 World Cup. Former Zimbabwe national team player Raymond Price says Watmore's first task is to bring back confidence to the players. More importantly is the fact that Watmore does not have much time to prepare the team. There is only a month to go before the start of the biggest cricket tournament in the world. The World Cup runs in New Zealand and Australia between February 14 and March 29, and Price says the final team for the World Cup has to be picked now. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Thank you, Michael. Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 when our host will be talking about road traffic accidents in Zimbabwe. That's all for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night.
And I'm sorry. This is Dimiake Makalieri in Washington.